The CBS News Weekend Roundup, coming up next.
It's finally fall. The weather is cooling off, and there's no better time to upgrade your cookouts than right now. Let me tell you about Omaha Steaks. They have a huge menu of steaks and more. The process is convenient and quick, shopping delivered straight to your door. Every purchase is backed by Omaha Steaks' 100% unconditional guarantee. And right now, you can get the limited-time family grill pack for just $49.99. You get all of this. 2 5-ounce filet mignons, 2 5-ounce top sirloins, 4 4-ounce boneless pork chops, 4 3.5-ounce chicken fried steaks, 12-ounce package of all-beef meatballs, 4 4-ounce Omaha Steak Burgers, 4 4-ounce Gourmet Jumbo Franks, a 16-ounce package of Omaha Steakhouse Fries, 4 caramel apple tartlets, OS seasoning packet, plus 4 additional Omaha Steaks Burgers. Just for listening, Omaha Steaks is offering all of this for only $49.99. This is a huge savings. Go to omahasteaks.com, enter code FTN in the search bar, and add the Family Grill Pack to your cart. Don't miss this deal. Visit omahasteaks.com and enter code FTN in the search bar to get over 30 gourmet items for just $49.99.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. We like to think that radio news is your chance to share the experience of feeling history being made. We certainly had that feeling as Election Day stretched into Wednesday morning. As CBS's Charlie Rose put it,
Donald Trump wins the presidency in one of the greatest upsets in election history. Voters demanding a change cause a political earthquake.
We'll measure the tremors and explore the reasons. Just for instance, you'll hear CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman about Pennsylvania, a state Hillary Clinton had been counting on, but Donald Trump was the winner there.
Big cities went for Hillary Clinton, Philadelphia especially, Pittsburgh especially, but in between those cities, in rural areas, these people went for Donald Trump.
And we transition from calling him Trump on second reference. It's now Mr. Trump. That's what we do when speaking of presidents, former presidents, and the president-elect. I'm Dan Revive in Washington. A lot more ahead on this weekend roundup, but let's begin with the morning-after reports by our top campaign correspondents. Major Garrett had been traveling for months with Mr. Trump, describing how Tuesday unfolded.
Early returns and exit polls were discouraging, but despair soon gave way to joy as Trump's unshakable belief in voter turnout that would defy expectations and shatter all predictions materialized. And no matter how improbably, the presidency was Trump's.
The president-elect of the United States of America, Donald Trump.
With characteristic flair and his family and campaign advisors in tow, Donald Trump began the transition from political phenomenon to commander-in-chief.
I've just received a call from Secretary Clinton.
Saluting the vanquished Democratic nominee he once threatened to jail during an historically bitter campaign.
Hillary has worked very long and very hard over a long period of time. And we owe her a major debt of gratitude for her service to our country. I mean that very sincerely.
With votes still being counted, Trump offered soothing words to the more than 58 million Americans who voted against him, vowing to pursue reconciliation.
For those who have chosen not to support me in the past, of which there were a few people, I'm reaching out to you for your guidance and your help so that we can work together and unify our great country.
Trump said it was time for the country to dream big, and he promised massive investments in new infrastructure and a push to clean up America's inner cities.
America will no longer settle for anything less than the best.
As he has throughout the campaign, Trump said his administration would soften the blows of globalization with tougher policies on trade and immigration.
The forgotten men and women of our country will be forgotten no longer.
Living a history he uniquely saw as his political destiny, Trump said he would now focus on the fight ahead.
While the campaign is over, our work on this movement is now really just beginning.
Donald Trump, his running mate, future Vice President Mike Pence, and their families were on stage in a hotel ballroom. And barely 2 miles to the southwest, also in New York City, CBS's Nancy Cordes was at Hillary Clinton's party, designed as a celebration.
where at first they had been jubilant. They were crying. They were shell-shocked. They were hugging each other for support as the night went on. This campaign had been so sure of victory based on its data that at 8 p.m., they told us she was putting the finishing touches on one of the two speeches they had prepared for her, a sign they all believed that she had won and might even be declaring victory on the early side. Their internal polling had showed her leading in the states that they considered her surest path to victory, holding Michigan, then winning Nevada, Colorado, Pennsylvania, and Virginia. But turnout ended up being soft in some key urban areas, and suddenly Pennsylvania, where she had led throughout the entire election, was a nail biter. Michigan, a nail biter. Wisconsin, a state that aides freely admit wasn't even on their radar screen, a nail biter. Clinton had not visited that state in 7 months. President Obama won that state by 7 points back in 2012. This all shows you why they thought a state like that might be a sure thing.
Talking about Wisconsin, where Trump was the winner. Though there is the suspicion that voters didn't tell the full truth to pollsters, some of them standing just outside asking questions, including, whom did you vote for? CBS's Anthony Mason did find interesting motivations in the exit poll results.
The three key pillars of Donald Trump's victory were, first of all, men. He won men by 12 points, 53-41%. Secondly, he won whites without college degrees by 67-28%, more than 2-1. The most important quality voters were looking for yesterday was a candidate who could bring about change. Among those voters, Donald Trump won 83%. Now, there was a lot of concern after the Access Hollywood tape that Republicans might desert Trump as some leaders unendorsed him. Well, he won 81% of conservatives, 81% of white evangelicals, and in the end, 9 out of 10 Republicans voted for Donald Trump.
Let's follow up with CBS News senior political editor Steve Chigaris. 59% of the American citizens who are eligible to vote did register and vote, about the same as 4 years ago. In fact, the percentage is up a little bit. No surprise there, though. 4 out of 10 Americans who could vote don't bother to do so. Steve, how about the results? Victory for Mr. Trump. The results were surprising?
I believe they were. The Trump people were surprised, the Clinton people were surprised, and we were all surprised. The polling showed Hillary Clinton leading going into election night, and we saw what happened.
And not just the national popular vote. We knew to look at it state by state, and she seemed to be just ahead, though others like Florida and Ohio were too close to call, as we saw.
You have to watch the vote count as it comes in, because it does, and this is a cliche, but it comes down to turnout. And what we saw happen Tuesday night was the reason why Hillary Clinton lost, because her turnout was not nearly as robust as Donald Trump's. If you look at how many people turned out to vote for Hillary Clinton, she was off by millions of votes compared to what Barack Obama received in 2008 and 2012, and that proved to be the difference, especially in these battleground states.
Had Democrats known that she would not get as many votes in the key states as Barack Obama? Did they know that was almost for sure going to happen?
There was a sense that among certain demographics, she was going to lose support compared to Barack Obama. At the last minute, she was throwing huge rallies in places like Detroit and Philadelphia to try to boost turnout. She had Bruce Springsteen and the Obamas show up to Philadelphia the night before the election. These are signs that they knew that they had an issue with turnout. Now, did they think it was going to be such an issue that it was going to drop her to the level where she landed? I don't think anybody saw that coming.
We'll chat some more later with CBS's Steve Chigaris. Please stay tuned. Our coverage will resume with the protests that followed Election Day. Then we'll report on Donald Trump's visit to the White House and the Capitol on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Dan Revive. Election Day was, of course, Tuesday. The result was clear only on Wednesday morning, at least New York and Washington time. Both those cities had voted heavily for Hillary Clinton. Many people working in New York and D.C. said they felt that most people were tired, shocked, even disgusted that Donald Trump had won. And some people in big cities especially were so angry they went out to protest Wednesday and Thursday nights. Things got violent and destructive in Portland, Oregon.
This is the Portland Police Bureau. This is an unlawful gathering.
Police fired tear gas canisters to disperse crowds after a dumpster was set on fire and windows were smashed. Cole Miller of KOIN reported.
We saw flashbangs going off, rubber bullets, rubber projectiles being shot at the crowd to get them to disperse off some of the public transportation railways. At one point then, we saw protesters, some of these demonstrators throwing glass bottles at these officers.
Police Sergeant Peter Simpson said the trouble was due to just a few of the protesters.
This is an anarchist group that is hijacked and inserted itself in a larger crowd.
Portland police made a few dozen arrests. In Los Angeles, around 200 arrests. Earlier that night, Thursday, CBS News correspondent DeMarco Morgan reported on what happened coast to coast.
Fires raged in Oakland, where 7,000 gathered, while an effigy of the president-elect burned in L.A. In Chicago, protesters shut down Lakeshore Drive, and activists lit up a better-than-bigotry message outside of the White House. It seems like everywhere there's a Trump building, there's an anti-Trump protest.
CBS's DeMarco Morgan in New York City, where a crowd blocked traffic on very busy Fifth Avenue near the president-elect's home, Trump Tower. And from inside, Mr. Trump on Twitter had two differing opinions, at first writing it was very unfair that the media incited professional protesters. But hours later, he wrote that he loves the fact that small groups might have passion for our great country. The president-elect added, "We will all come together and be proud." On Thursday morning, Mr. Trump came to Washington, invited by President Obama, the first time they ever met. Major Garrett reported.
The two spent 90 minutes alone discussing foreign and domestic policy and the logistics of handing over power.
I believe that it is important for all of us, regardless of party and regardless of political preferences, to now come together, work together, to deal with the many challenges that we face.
Mr. Trump echoed those sentiments.
I very much look forward to dealing with the president in the future, including counsel. It was a great honor being with you, and I look forward to being with you many, many more times in the future. Thank you, sir.
As reporters were ushered out, Trump complimented his longtime foe.
Very good man.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you.
The Oval Office civility bore no relationship to the campaign trail.
Our president is incompetent.
On the economy, Donald Trump is uniquely unqualified to be our chief executive.
White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest.
The president's views haven't changed. He stands by what he said on the campaign trail. But the American people decided. The election is over.
Also reporting on Thursday, CBS's Nancy Cordes on the Trumps and their visit to the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, at the Capitol.
Let me just say how excited we are about these opportunities for the country.
A pragmatic House Speaker tabled months of animosity, giving Mr. Trump a tour of where he'll be inaugurated and even employing Mr. Trump's campaign motto.
We are now talking about how we're going to hit the ground running to make sure that we can get this country turned around and make America great again.
Mr. Trump said he would be doing, quote, spectacular things with Ryan and Senate Leader Mitch McConnell.
Whether it's health care or immigration, so many different things.
During the race, both Ryan and McConnell routinely condemned their own nominee. Their new detente is a fragile one. Trump wants to build a border wall. Ryan doesn't. But they do agree on dismantling Obamacare right away. Former GOP Senate aide Christopher Condoluzzi says Republicans will move to repeal the law first, then debate how to replace it.
Congressional Republicans, as well as the Trump administration, will pursue some sort of transition period. Is it 1 year? Is it 2 years? That remains to be seen.
Democrats picked up a few seats in the House and Senate, but not enough to block repeal. Senator Elizabeth Warren told a union group she is gearing up for a new reality.
If the Republicans want to strip away health insurance from 20 million Americans, if they want to let cancer survivors get kicked to the curb, if they want to throw 24-year-olds off their parents' health insurance, then we will fight them every step of the way.
Senator Elizabeth Warren ending that report by Nancy Cordes from Thursday. Senator Bernie Sanders, defeated, of course, by Hillary Clinton in the Democratic Party primaries, also declared that if Mr. Trump has the idea to help Americans with good jobs and wages, then Sanders will be with him. But the proud-to-be-progressive Vermont senator wrote on Twitter, if Donald Trump takes people's anger and turns it against Muslims, Hispanics, African Americans, and women, we will be his worst nightmare. Let's continue our conversation with CBS News senior political editor Steve Chigaris. We were talking about Trump campaign officials just before Election Day claiming they would capture Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin.
I still don't believe that the Trump people in each of those states thought that they had a chance to win all of those states. And so that's why I think everybody was surprised on Wednesday morning when everybody woke up and saw that he had won the Electoral College majority.
Winning almost all the battleground states.
That's right. They felt that their support was being underrepresented in the polls, but there was not a general sense that they were beating Hillary Clinton in these places. And it comes down to who came out to vote. And it seems as if the Hillary Clinton people just did not come out at the numbers that they expected.
So, late Tuesday night, it was really Wednesday morning, about 3 a.m. in New York City, Donald Trump delivered a victory speech that was gracious and thanked Hillary Clinton for her service to the nation. Hillary Clinton left her appearance till later that day. On Wednesday, she was gracious too, obviously crushed, admitting that it hurt. What about this level of grace?
I think this year especially, the grace is necessary. You're looking at two candidates who are viewed very unfavorably by Americans. And so whoever was going to win has an uphill battle in convincing voters and Americans that they are the right choice to be the next president. So that's where Donald Trump is starting off. Hillary Clinton, again, who is somebody who is not very well liked by the electorate, has to come across as somebody that is trying to unify the country. You don't want to be a sore loser in this situation.
When Mr. Trump visited Mr. Obama in the Oval Office, he called the president a very good man. It's certainly a positive vibe.
A respectful tone, which I think a lot of his critics would say didn't exist during the campaign.
CBS News senior political editor Steve Chigaris. Thank you, Steve.
Thanks, Dan.
In some of California's ballot initiatives, voters rejected canceling the death penalty, but they did approve legalizing marijuana. Massachusetts, Nevada, and Maine also legalized all uses of pot or grass by adults. Up next, more about the election on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
When your medical practice is growing fast and you have more patients than you have room for, you need to start, well, making some room. Which means, all of a sudden, you're looking to buy new exam tables and stools, x-ray machines, and microscopes quickly. Business cards from American Express Open can give you buying power to help cover the big purchases you need to make when you need to make them. Find out how American Express cards and services can help prepare you for growth at open.com.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Dan Raviv. Foreign reaction to Donald Trump's victory in many countries, surprise. European newspaper front pages mocked American voters for choosing someone who's inexperienced and vulgar. But the leaders of Russia and Israel clearly welcomed the Trump victory. Israel did thank both Trump and Hillary Clinton for being good friends of the Jewish state. Syrian rebel groups who say they're fighting for democracy say this is bad for them, predicting Trump will side with Russia, pounding ISIS, it's true, but basically letting the Bashar al-Assad dictatorship in Syria continue. Reaction in Mexico, especially strong, almost all negative, as CBS's Manuel Bajorquez reports.
Trump has threatened to tear up the trade agreement between the U.S. and Mexico, putting millions of jobs at risk. He has also vowed to build a giant border wall and make Mexico pay for it. Claudia Ruiz Massieu is Mexico's foreign minister.
We would not consider paying for any wall that puts barriers between our integration and our competitiveness.
But if a Trump administration seems to be putting up a fight, is Mexico ready to fight back?
Well, Mexico is ready to protect our people, but we are also ready to work with the next American administration.
Mexican Senator Armando Ríos-Peter isn't taking any chances. He's drafted a law that would stop Mexico from using public funds to pay for a border wall. He also said Mexico could retaliate by revising security agreements with the U.S.
Sounds almost like a threat, some would say.
No, the threat is what Trump is doing.
That from Mexico City. In this country, was it a complete surprise this past Tuesday when Donald Trump was the winner and Hillary Clinton the loser? CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman, you were covering the pro-Clinton gathering that was designed to be her victory party on Tuesday night in New York City. Just about everyone said they expected to celebrate the election of the first female president, right?
They thought they were there to see history. There were many women with their young daughters, even. They wanted to especially experience what they thought was going to be an historic moment when the first woman president would be officially elected. Obviously, it didn't turn out that way.
But on the air here at CBS Radio News, early Tuesday morning, before the voting started, well, let's play an example of what you reported.
The Clinton campaign is very confident of victory today unless something drastically goes wrong. Their internal polls show Clinton with leads in enough significant states to give her the presidency. The biggest worry among Clinton officials is that somehow their polling data may be off and that somehow they have underestimated the strength of Donald Trump. And this is not an unreasonable concern. There have been many times during the past year that other Trump strengths have been incorrectly discounted.
And Steve, that was based in part on your travels covering the last week or so of the presidential campaign. Where were you?
I was in what they call the Rust Belt. I was in the states of Ohio and Pennsylvania primarily. Did not get to Wisconsin, did not get to Michigan, but they are nearby. And I was sensing, at least from the Trump supporters, they kept telling me something is going on here. I even spoke to one gentleman in Youngstown, Ohio, right on the edge of the Pennsylvania border. He is a Democrat. He said, something is happening here. I am a bit worried. And this sort of was something that the Trump people were telling me was happening. I wasn't sure I was detecting it. Listen to this woman. She was someone I spoke to in Hershey, Pennsylvania. She is, for me, sort of the litmus test of what was taking place in Pennsylvania.
I supported Hillary Clinton 8 years ago, and I think a lot of people like myself have realized she is a different candidate this time around. She is just not the same.
This time, Steve, we detected only limited enthusiasm about a female for president.
And that woman, Dan, I think sort of symbolized what I came to see, especially outside the big cities. Big cities went for Hillary Clinton, Philadelphia especially, Pittsburgh especially. But in between those cities, in rural areas, these people went for Donald Trump.
CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman, usually in Los Angeles, but reporting on the start of the presidential transition. Here you are in Washington, D.C. Welcome and thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Dan.
On Wednesday, just hours after Donald Trump's victory speech in New York, CBS News political director John Dickerson was on CBS This Morning speaking with co-anchors Charlie Rose, Nora O'Donnell, and Gayle King.
So was it the rural vote in the Rust Belt that really propelled Donald Trump to the presidency?
Well, you know, yes and no, but he also won Florida. I mean, you know, so Florida and North Carolina, those are not Rust Belt states.
But if Michigan and Wisconsin had stayed in Democratic territory, Hillary Clinton would be president of the United States.
It wasn't just the Rust Belt.
And Florida.
What's interesting to me is how you turn this into a mandate. Of course, Donald Trump has a mandate in terms of the electoral vote, but when you look at the popular vote, it's pretty close.
As of Friday, almost all the votes counted. Hillary Clinton did have the lead, 60,449,000 votes. Donald Trump had 60,050,000 votes behind by about 400,000. That was John Dickerson, the host of Face the Nation on CBS every Sunday. Now, sad news.
Hallelujah.
The death of poet and musician Leonard Cohen at age 82. Far too young to leave us, but he left us Hallelujah and other songs we'll remember. CBS's Anthony Mason looks back.
I've heard there was the secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord.
One of the most influential songwriters of his generation, Leonard Cohen is best known for a ballad that became an anthem. Critic Alan Light says it's a song you almost didn't get to hear.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah was a song that really tormented him. He talks about being in a hotel room in New York City, banging his head on the floor because he couldn't figure out where the song was. He wrote 75 or 80 verses for it.
Your faith was strong, but you needed proof.
Since its release in 1984 on Cohen's album Various Positions, more than 300 cover versions of Hallelujah have been recorded. Born in Montreal, Cohen started writing poetry in the 50s and began putting his words to music in the 60s. His last album was released just last month, and Cohen's song, You Want It Darker, hinted the end was near.
If you are the dealer, I'm out of the game. If you are the healer, means I'm broken and lame.
Poetry is just the evidence of life, Leonard Cohen once said. If your life is burning well, poetry is just the ash.
Hallelujah.
Anthony Mason, CBS News, New York.
On Friday, Americans who served in our country's military were honored. Some terrific ceremonies and gatherings for Veterans Day. Thanks to all of you. And please follow us on Twitter at CBS Radio News. I'm at Dan Raviv on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Dan Raviv. The battle for control of Congress? Democrats had high hopes that they could recapture a majority in the U.S. Senate. They thought practically all year that Donald Trump is a weak candidate, dividing the Republican Party. So instead of coattails, a winning candidate for president, helping the Republicans running for office lower down the ballot, Trump would be a burden, a dead weight for Republicans. Suffice it to say, that's not how things turned out. With 34 Senate races, the Democrats needed a net gain of 4 seats, plus a victory for Hillary Clinton so that Tim Kaine would be vice president and break the tie in any 50-50 vote. In the House, Democrats would have needed a net gain of 30. They failed. CBS News correspondent Steve Dorsey has details.
Democrats won 2 new seats in the Senate, one by Illinois Congresswoman Tammy Duckworth, then a big upset in New Hampshire, where Governor Maggie Hassan ousted Kelly Ayotte. Hassan declared victory with a margin of just a few hundred votes.
It's up to all of us, elected leaders, citizens now, to come together and focus on our common challenges and our common opportunities.
Ayotte conceded Wednesday. Democratic control of the Senate could have been a major check to Trump, with the party able to block conservative Supreme Court appointments. Instead, Democrats can only filibuster. In the House, a similar story. Republicans have lost just 6 seats. A couple races are still too close to call. Speaker Paul Ryan now plans to move forward with an ambitious agenda.
Now, Donald Trump will lead a unified Republican government. And we will work hand in hand on a positive agenda to tackle this country's big challenges.
Democrats scrambling to rebuild their party with an eye now on the 2018 midterm elections. Steve Dorsey, CBS News, Washington.
Now let's hear what the successful campaign manager for Donald Trump had to say after getting, we think, no sleep at all on Tuesday night. Kellyanne Conway is a veteran pollster who gets a lot of credit from political observers for adjusting Trump's style, getting him to stick mostly to the teleprompter with fewer controversial ad-libs. Here's Kellyanne Conway Wednesday on CBS This Morning with Nora O'Donnell, Gayle King, and Charlie Rose, who asked about the concession phone call from Hillary Clinton.
It was a very gracious conversation about 2:30 a.m. or so. Our plan was really just to wait and see if the rest of the states and the presidency had been called. And in the meantime, my phone rang and I handed it to Mr. Trump, and he and Secretary Clinton had a brief but very gracious, very warm conversation. He commended her on how smart and tough she is and what a great campaign she ran. And she congratulated him on his victory.
He did talk about bringing the country together. What are some of the immediate steps that he will take in order to do that?
You know, we can learn an awful lot from those who don't support us. And that's one thing that we even tried to do here at the Trump campaign, was listen to people and hear what their concerns are, their frustrations, their fears. And I think that will continue in a Trump presidency.
Will you share with us how that conversation came about with Donald Trump and President Obama?
That was also a very cordial conversation among, you know, between two men who had been at battle, frankly. I mean, President Obama was really trying to transfer his considerable popularity and political currency over to Hillary Clinton. And I think he and the First Lady, Michelle Obama, went all out for Hillary Clinton.
Kellyanne, you know, it is being described as the biggest political upset in history. Some people were even using that phrase. When did you guys know that this was going to happen?
About 2.5 weeks ago, it started to come together, Gail. We had really navigated and survived a number of darker days here on the campaign, and we started to notice a few things, that we were becoming more competitive in some of these traditionally blue states. And these are states like Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, that are very attracted to the Donald Trump message of creating jobs, bringing back manufacturing jobs, certainly curbing illegal immigration, talking about fairness to the American worker, creating new jobs, and I think, frankly, just being an outsider. But what really started to crystallize is that we noticed all the time that Hillary Clinton had a difficult time in each of these swing states getting at 45, 46, 47%, let alone the 50% plus that President Obama achieved twice. And then I think the perfect storm was completed by Obamacare premiums increasing in October. People were literally opening up their mailboxes, clicking onto their computers, and finding the notices that their premiums were exploding under Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. So it really all came together. Mr. Trump stuck to the issue set, continued to run the campaign as he always has with these big rallies. And wherever we went, literally, any stop that we added, he had huge crowds.
Kellyanne Conway, campaign manager for Donald Trump, speaking on Wednesday morning, a few hours after victory. You may have wondered, because three of Donald Trump's five children had prominent roles in his campaign, might they become government officials? Apparently not. First of all, Donald Jr., Eric, and Ivanka all are senior executives of the family-owned company that deals in real estate and hotels, mostly. The president's supposed to put his financial holdings in a blind trust, and traditionally he'd say he's paying no attention to his investments, not while he's president of the United States. In addition, there's an anti-nepotism law passed in 1967 banning public officials, including the president, from appointing any family member to head an executive agency. It's believed that would include being White House chief of staff, so that won't be Ivanka Trump. Now, fear expressed by people who came to this country from Latin America, some interviewed by CBS News correspondent Carter Evans in Southern California, admitting they're not in this country legally.
Immigrants are determined to keep President-elect Trump from following through on his campaign threat to deport millions, like Yamilex Rustrian.
If I get deported the day of tomorrow, I have nowhere to go. I have nowhere. I obviously have family, but I would feel lost.
She's afraid her family will be ripped apart, as so many were the last two times the U.S. government forced out immigrants en masse.
It's a tough feeling not to know the person that was your father.
This is my father.
Former U.S. Congressman Esteban Torres's father was one of an estimated 2 million immigrants who were shipped out of the country as part of a government campaign to save American jobs during the Great Depression. It was called Mexican repatriation.
So they just rounded them all up?
Rounded them all up and shipped them back to their home country.
Just 3 years old, Torres was allowed to stay in the U.S. with his mother because he was born here. But roughly 60% of those sent across the border were American-born children.
It was rough. I remember living in shacks, you know. My mother couldn't afford anything better.
And it all happened again in the 50s during Operation Wetback, when another 250,000 immigrants were sent back across the border. UCLA professor Raul Hinojosa Ojeda.
It's a really dark part of U.S. history. These roundups did capture and break up families that have consequences even today.
Torres never saw his father again.
It left me with a taste of how cruel authorities can be.
He just hopes President Trump doesn't repeat history. Carter Evans, CBS News, Los Angeles.
Of course, with all the momentous news this past week, we'll have more on the choice that American voters made and what it means, a big political shift after 8 years of Barack Obama. Next on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
Get the latest information when you want it. Download the CBS Radio News app, either on iOS or Android. You also get great features, breaking news, and access to the CBS Radio News Twitter and Facebook feeds. Learn about your world while you take care of all the things you need to take care of. It's perfect for the gym, running errands, or doing chores around the house. CBS Radio News. Get it in the Apple App Store or Google Play today.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Dan Revive. The election of Donald Trump, the non-politician, reality TV star, real estate billionaire, to be president of the United States is a very sharp change. During the campaign, Mr. Trump condemned the man who's been president for the past almost 8 years as a failure. But as we reported, when Mr. Trump sat with Barack Obama in the Oval Office after 90 minutes of private talks this past Thursday, Trump praised the president.
Very good man.
Thank you, guys.
Still, government policies are about to change, probably a lot, and liberals, the vast majority of them having voted for Clinton, have been licking their wounds, some of them signing petitions to the Electoral College, begging the electors not to confirm Donald Trump to be president. And we've reported on protests in the streets in some cities. Folks chanting, "Not my president," in New York City. As of Tuesday morning, Clinton supporters had been truly confident that she would win. The Trump team said our candidate can win if things break our way. So CBS News political analyst Leonard Steinhorn, professor at American University, was the result a surprise?
Well, in terms of public perception, surprising may be too mild a word when you think about the fact that virtually every single poll had her winning by 3, 4, 5, 6 percentage points, had her winning the Electoral College, some people estimating upwards in the mid-300s beating Donald Trump in the Electoral College. But he ran the table on every single battleground state, everyone he needed. He won. There should have been some indication when Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and the Democratic team were rushing to Pennsylvania and rushing to Wisconsin and rushing to Michigan at the last minute. They had to detect that there was something going on in those states. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened.
And it might have looked like they were having fun, the Obamas endorsing Hillary Clinton and speaking about her and famous musicians playing music. But it's not fun in the last few days of a presidential campaign. Now we realize it may have been desperation.
It was desperation. It was an attempt to get the voters out. It was an attempt to motivate people. Hillary Clinton did not have enthusiasm behind her. She did not have that wind in her sails. Donald Trump did. He kept saying that the best indication of what he'll do in this election are the size of his crowds, the energy there. And it turns out that Donald Trump, who had never run for office before, figured something out there.
Which is the energy of a rally and all that free TV publicity without even buying as much advertising as Clinton did. It can work in modern American society. If there's something special about you, even if it's sometimes vulgar and people object, and even some Republicans objected, it got him so much attention for his message of America first and take care of this country. That resonated with enough people.
Yeah, absolutely. And he was able to drive the political narrative from day one. And he treated it almost as if it were a reality show with plot twists and turns, the unexpected, the surprises. Even when he got bad news, he was still the center of attention. He was able to dominate the conversation in this country. And sure enough, that turned out that he dominated the vote.
How about the message in his acceptance speech, his victory speech in New York, especially that he had nice things to say about Hillary Clinton, praising her public service and saying we should thank her, and I mean it sincerely, not even a hint anymore that she was crooked or criminal or ought to be in jail.
Sure, nothing about a rigged election, certainly, because he won it. But he was gracious in his speech. He knows that right now he will be presiding over a deeply divided country, a country that has really severe doubts about him. He knows he has to knit this society back together under his leadership. He's going to have to find a way to make people feel comfortable with Donald Trump as president of the United States. He's going to have to figure out how to go beyond his bellicose rhetoric from the campaign and reach out to some of the people who opposed him.
And his goals, even in his victory speech, he set out very ambitious goals, such as doubling the economic growth of the United States, creating many jobs, you know, things that he'd said before. And by the way, he did not repeat that he would build a wall to keep out immigrants from Latin America or make Mexico pay for it. It was a gracious speech, but it did contain big promises that any president, no matter how talented, would find very difficult to do.
Some of the things he said in his speech actually may reach across the political divide. Rebuilding the infrastructure, that's very popular among the Democrats. Supporting veterans, that's very popular among the Democrats. Obviously, economic growth is as well. Some of the more divisive ideas from his campaign, whether it's building the wall, as you say, or keeping people of the Muslim faith out of the country. He didn't mention those things. That's where it's going to be a lot tougher to implement. But those were also key promises of his campaign. So we'll have to see how he goes ahead and actually puts them into practice.
That's CBS News analyst Professor Leonard Steinhorn. Thank you for being with us throughout campaign 2016.
My pleasure, Dan. Thank you.
We end our weekend roundup with a profile of Melania Trump, the future first lady who had tea in the White House with Michelle Obama on Thursday while their husbands were having their private chat. Mr. Trump tweeted later that his wife really liked, quote, Mrs. O. Here's a report that evening by CBS News correspondent Margaret Brennan.
Melania Trump will make history when she becomes first lady, the only one to grow up in a communist nation, the former Yugoslavia, and only the second born abroad in nearly 200 years. The former fashion model, who speaks five languages, will soon have to decide how to use her new platform, according to Anita McBride, who served Laura Bush.
I think that she's given us a little bit of a hint of what she thinks she would like to work on, and that is the issue of social media with young children.
Children and teenagers can be fragile.
Mrs. Trump gave only two major speeches during the campaign, and one, her convention address, plagiarized from Mrs. Obama's 2008 speech. She'll follow the high-profile first lady, who championed healthy eating and did star turns on late-night television.
It's a position description that gets rewritten with each person, and we will adapt to it. The White House will adapt to its new occupant, and the occupants will adapt to the White House, and so will Americans.
One thing in common, both will have raised young children in the White House. 10-year-old Barron Trump will be the youngest boy in the executive mansion since JFK Jr., White House spokesman Josh Earnest.
Mrs. Obama has talked before publicly about the stresses and anxieties of moving to a new place, living inside a fishbowl, living inside a museum, and raising her family there. And I'm sure that Mrs. Trump is feeling many of those same anxieties.
Joshua Earnest, spokesman for the White House, just now launching a transition. President Obama has told his team, in fact, in every government agency, employees are instructed to cooperate fully and help the incoming Trump people start their jobs for the success of the United States of America. The new president, Donald J. Trump, to be sworn in on January 20th here in Washington, D.C. Thanks for listening. Anytime you want to hear us, including past episodes, do an internet search for CBS Weekend Roundup or use our app for your smartphone. The free app is CBS Radio News. The Weekend Roundup is produced by Howard Arenstein in Washington. I'm Dan Revive. Have a great week.